Welcome to the Game Changer Unlocked, where we spotlight elite performance and the people behind it. I'm your host, Brian Fetzer. Today's guest is someone who worked directly impacted some of the biggest names in sports. Roberta Anding is a nationally recognized sports dietitian with over 35 years of experience. She's a co-founder of Performance 365, a top-tier sports nutrition consulting firm, and has worked with the Houston Texans, the Houston Astros, and Rice University, just to name a few. She's a certified diabetics educator and a board-certified specialist in sports dietetics, and a true leader in the nutrition space. Roberta, it's an honor to have you here on the show. Welcome.
I'm so excited. Happy to be here.
One of the things that, you're getting a chance to work with NFL players and Major League Baseball players. What's really the biggest difference in what they consume?
Great question. So if we look at football, one of the things that I think most people don't realize is they are chronically injured. Mm. It is a violent sport. You're slamming up against people. So in terms of what they consume, it always has to be in that recovery mode. Mm. How do I recover? So it's just like anybody who's injured. So if you tear your ACL, there's going to be a different fueling pattern for you than if you didn't. So I think with football, it's that injury response. With baseball, it is a grind. It is a lot of games. It is a lot of games and a lot of travel and a lot of time away from home. So in reality, with 160 games, you have to plan and monitor your food intake a little bit different than an NFL player.
With Major League Baseball, I mean, sometimes they give you the behind-the-scenes shots of, you know, what the dugout or the team room or the locker room looks like with all the different spreads. Have you found that teams are very different from what they consume?
I think so, and I think the beauty of baseball, and one of the reasons I loved working in baseball, is the cultural differences. Mm. So if 40% of your players are Latino, you're not going to be serving chicken breast and white rice. There has to be that cultural piece to it. When I worked at the Astros, I had 4 people who were vegan. So catering those meals, I had to take care of the Latin players, my vegans, and then the guys who just wanted food. So when we think about the dynamics of that, the cultural differences were absolutely fun and amazing.
You know, I guess I never even thought to that point, because specifically baseball has a very, you know, diverse group of individuals from a lot of different places.
Sure.
That makes a lot of sense. Now with the NFL or with professional football, that's definitely, I mean, a lot of bigger guys.
Yes, it's probably the only time in my life I've really felt small. You know, if you have a J.J. Watt who's 6'6" and 310 pounds, and I'm barely touching 5'4",
right.
I felt small every time I walked into that building. But the amount of calories, probably the average player is consuming about 5,000 calories a day. Mm. And when you're that large and then you're in that recovery mode, because injury increases your calorie needs. So now you've got to accommodate for that. I think the average person would think, well, everybody's got a scripted plate and this is the way it is. And that's not really the way it is. You have to set up the food so players can self-regulate. So if you want them to self-regulate, there has to be enough really great things on the line for them to consume in order for them to self-regulate. So I never made a plate for somebody. I never said, you get 5,000 calories and here it is. Because food is all supposed to be fun. And it's not fun if someone's handing you a plate of things that you didn't choose.
For the general public out there, 5,000 calories compared to a normal person's eating, what would be the difference?
I would probably say twice the average meal.
Wow.
Twice the average meal. And I think historically it was just eat whatever you want and we're going to fill you up with whatever calories, go out and get fried chicken and fast food. That's not the case anymore. And today's professional athlete, whether it's football or baseball, now has a better appreciation that their body is their job. Mm. And if they don't take care of it, they may just be so genetically gifted the first couple years they're going to get away with it. But it catches up with everybody if you inappropriately fuel.
That makes a lot of sense. Now, thinking about like a specific moment, can you share a moment where your nutrition advice really kind of helped an athlete kind of make a breakthrough or a big performance? Maybe it was early on in their career, or maybe it was in the playoffs or something of that nature.
So a couple examples come to mind. And I'll mention names if I have permission to mention names. If not, I'm just going to kind of give you a generic. I had a guy who, by time he came to the Texans, he was 28 years old and had never had a fruit or a vegetable verified by his mom.
Wow.
And I said, I can retire once I get you to eat a fruit or a vegetable. He was just genetically gifted. And so it was like, no, I'm not eating that. I'm not eating that. I said, well, what if we put all this in a smoothie for you? And so we did bananas and pineapple, and yes, I threw in some spinach to force him to look at something that was green. And then we squeezed some honey in it, and it was like, well, this isn't so bad. This isn't so bad. So getting that mindset of, I need you to recover better. Yeah. And I always say, I want everybody to be a millionaire, and I want you to play as long as you want to play. And if you don't recover, that's going to come back and kick you in the shorts.
That makes total sense. I mean, now, beginning of the season, we talked about recovery a lot. Mm-hmm. From the beginning of the season, as you're getting into the playoff run, baseball is almost a full year, it seems like. In the NFL, as it gets towards the end of that season, does the dietary needs change, or does the thought process change at all?
Yeah, the thought process actually does change, because you know this, based on your background, that moderate amounts of exercise stimulate your immune system. Mm-hmm. Intense exercise can suppress it.
Right.
So what we would see as the season went on, particularly for football, is that guys were much more likely to get an upper respiratory infection. They were much more likely to get something GI related. It's because their immune system, along with their muscles and the rest of their body, their immune system's taking a hit. So the mindset would shift is, we really need to think more diligently about infection control. How do we control infection? How diligent is the staff in terms of cleaning the tables, cleaning the line, making sure that hot food is always hot, cold food is always cold, because that matters. And at home, it's easy to do. On the road, it's not. So when I would travel with the Texans, I was considered the food police, because I traveled with a thermometer, and if the hot food wasn't hot, it's like, send it back.
Right.
And then I would go back into the kitchen and say, I need to make sure you're giving me new fresh food and you're not just putting this in a pan.
Wow.
So the visiting hotels were never happy to see me. But as the season went on, you can't afford to lose your starting center, your starting tight end, or your wide receiver, or your QB from a foodborne illness. And so as the season goes on, infection control now goes up a little bit. Same thing for baseball. It's just a grind. And for the Astros, it was AL West, so the travel was a lot by the time you go to the West Coast.
Well, that was going to kind of goes into my next question, with all the crazy travel, specifically in baseball.
Yeah.
But that probably could apply to professional basketball or even college sports now.
Sure.
What are some things that individuals would do if they are traveling a lot?
Yeah.
If they're on the road and they're going to be gone, I mean, I know I get down a little bit, health-wise, when I'm traveling here and there. What could be something that a professional athlete might be doing on the road?
A couple things. One is that if you arrive late, there's really not too many options available in a hotel, right? You can get chicken fingers and french fries and maybe a burger. But if you pre-order, and I used to do that for a lot of players, meaning I knew the hotel we were going to, and these were guys that said, I just really need to eat healthy, I would call the hotel, pre-order a food, and then they would hold it for them, or they would fix it late. So some of it is just thinking about your travel times and arrival times. The other thing is that we would oftentimes put together a travel snack bags of things that I wanted people to eat, whether it was dried fruit, nuts, things that were non-perishable, a sandwich, non-perishable, like almond butter and honey on whole grain bread.
Cool.
So they had something when they landed, and they had fuel when they got to the hotel, even though they ate on the plane.
Yeah, I mean, you're just trying to get 5,000 calories in for football players or something like that, and they'd be eating a lot.
Yep.
Roberta, before we wrap up this segment, can you let people know how they could connect with you online, sure, with your company, specifically the Performance 365.
Yep. My business partner and I, Leslie Bonsi, who most recently worked for the Kansas City Chiefs, we have a company called Performance 365. We have a website that you can find us at, and you can just reach out to us through Performance 365.
It's a great way to do it.
Yep.
How about LinkedIn or anything like that? Is there any other social media?
Yep. So Performance 365, we're on LinkedIn, Instagram, X, on most major platforms, not TikTok, but most major platforms. And then certainly my LinkedIn profile would be Roberta Anding.
And we'll get in a little bit more into Performance 365 a little bit later in the show. But we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back with Roberta Anding and talk a lot more about nutrition and performance and how you really gotta feel.
Yeah.
Welcome back to the Game Changer Unlocked. Loving what you're watching? Don't miss a moment of the Game Changer Unlocked, or any of your favorite Now Media TV shows, live or on demand, anytime, anywhere. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku, iOS, or enjoy instant access with bilingual programming, both in English and Spanish. Prefer to listen to the podcast version? You can go to Now Media TV website at www.nowmedia.tv. From business to breaking news, to lifestyle, to cultural, really anything in between, Now Media TV is streaming 24/7 and ready wherever you are. I'm back with Roberta Anding, one of the nation's top sports dietitians who's worked with elite athletes across football, baseball, collegiate sports, kind of goes on and on and on. Her decades of experience in the clinical nutrition has given her a powerful perspective on how to fuel high-performance bodies. And we're going to kind of take a little turn into supplements and different aspects that are really popular today. You know, you studied how athletes' bodies change throughout a long season. What are some key things to watch for with their performance and how they kind of keep going?
Yeah, I think in the world of supplements, every single athlete I know takes supplements. It's more common than not. And I think you know that from your experience.
Absolutely.
It's more common than not. The question always is, do you need it to correct a deficiency? Sometimes you do. If you're a female athlete, you could be remarkably low in iron and just have unrelenting fatigue. You might use it for performance enhancement. And there are things that flat out work. And if we look at what works, probably at the top of that list is creatine. Mm. Creatine flat out works. And I wish some of the myths about creatine would go away,
right,
but they're out there. It is not a steroid. You're not going to become right, addicted to creatine. But it really does help that sprint type athlete, which to me is almost everybody, whether it's basketball, you're gonna have a sprint activity, certainly different parts of track and field. Every athlete in that arena would benefit from creatine.
You mentioned iron with female athletes. I know from personal experience in track and field, I can think of one young lady that was incredibly deficient, mm-hmm, and her performances weren't great. We didn't really change training up. All we did was make sure we boosted her iron intake and vitamin D.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, she became a superhero.
Yeah. And that's honestly true. And for the really competitive athlete, and that's the world you and I both live in that really competitive athlete, if they see their performance drop, the first thing they think about is, I need to train harder. Let me go train more, rather than saying, I wonder if I would benefit from going and seeing a sports dietitian, going back to the team doc, and get an evaluation of my overall health.
Well, I mean, I think recovery, you'd mentioned it a little bit earlier, that recovery plays such a huge role in performance. And if you're not eating properly,
right,
you know, you're gonna have to supplement with something. Are there other supplements or other vitamins that you've seen that most people are deficient in?
Ones that stand out, and you mentioned it, vitamin D. And this is particularly true of athletes of color. If you have melanin in your skin, not just African American, you could be Pakistani, you could be Indian, you could be from the Dominican. Anybody who has a decent amount of melanin in their skin is not going to be able to synthesize vitamin D in their skin. as effectively. And their food sources are poor. Mm-hmm. We don't have a lot of food sources. And so supplementation. And so it took me a while to get this into Rice University, but we started to test every freshman coming in for a vitamin D deficiency. And it was impressive, the level of deficiency. It was impressive. Yeah.
Now, we did the same thing when I was at Virginia, mm-hmm. the iron for all the females, yes. and D for all the males. And it was shocking to see the recovery piece, but then not even that, but the immune part, the sicknesses
Absolutely.
Seemed to drop pretty substantially when we boosted all that up.
Yep, and I look at vitamin D as like the head coach. It tells every cell in your body what to do and how to behave. Yep. And so if you're deficient, you can have immunosuppression. If you're deficient, you can also have some atrophy of type 2 muscle fibers, meaning those explosive muscle fibers don't develop and maintain the same way that they would. So across all the performance perspective, vitamin D to me becomes a big one. And you don't know if you're deficient unless you have a blood test. You can't just say, I think I'm deficient, because vitamin D can be toxic, but I see more deficiencies than toxicities.
That makes complete sense. Now we're going to switch a little bit because it's become such a buzz topic, GLP-1.
Yeah.
Especially like Ozempic. You hear about Hollywood stars and you see these individuals that have these massive weight losses. You know, are there natural ways? I mean, we can talk about that, but then are there natural ways to kind of get the same results?
Well, and I think the culture that we live in extremes. So people say, in order to lose weight, I need to go keto or paleo, or I need to go vegan. And both of those are the extreme. And you can certainly supplement around that. When we know what helps with weight management, there are some key factors here. One is fiber. And so if you look at fiber requirements being anywhere between about 25 and 30 grams per day, average American gets 10. And so what fiber does is it makes you feel full longer. And that's in essence what the heavy hitters, GLP-1 agonists, actually do. They make you feel full longer. They delay food leaving your stomach. So I can't say fiber is equal to those drugs, because those drugs for people who are really struggling with weight, maybe my height and 400 pounds, those drugs are lifesavers. But for the average person who might want to lose 10 or 15 pounds, those drugs are, in my mind, contraindicated. That's not the use of those drugs. So fiber and fluid do make a difference in terms of weight management.
Well, unfortunately, we live in a society where it's, we want something at the snap of our fingers and not the long-term process of losing weight properly, or even gaining weight properly is a different side of it. But, you know, with that said, is there certain well-known supplements and so forth out there that probably should stay away from a standpoint of just they're not necessarily used typically for their intended purposes. Like you just said, GLP-1s. I mean, you see somebody that's pretty healthy, they just want to lose weight a little quicker. Are there some other ones out there that are?
And I'm smiling because in our world, I always think about, are you going to fail a drug test? Are you going to fail a drug test if you take this? And I think a lot of the weight loss supplements out there, fat burners, for example, things that actually jack up your metabolic rate, make you feel shaky and jittery and all of that, also can increase your blood pressure. So fat burners are on my no-go list just because of the side effects. I would also say supplements that would say that they can boost your lean body mass and you don't need to do anything. You and I both know if you're going to add muscle, you got to have adequate protein and you have to lift weights. There's no easy way around it. So I think in a category of this is a quick fix, the fat burners and the ones that increase lean body mass, those are two categories, A, that are more likely to cause you to fail a drug test, and B, not worth it, not worth it.
Are there, I mean, I know there are, but I come from your perspective, kind of the labels on the supplement products. Mm. You know, if there's certain labels, does it help prevent for maybe a positive drug test or something that somebody that's younger that's looking out at a parent that's, hey, you should make sure the supplement says this on it.
Yes, and third-party certification is a big deal. And there are two major players in that space here in the United States. One is NSF. Nancy, Sam, Frank, NSF Certified for Sport. And the other one is Informed Sport. And the great news is for consumers, you can download free apps. NSF Certified for Sport has a free app, and so does Informed Sport. So you can go and take a look at your supplements, scan the barcode, and if it's not in that database, it means it's the Wild West. It may have active ingredient, it may not, but for all consumers, whether you're going to be drug tested or not, I want to know if a product I'm spending money on actually works and is it safe.
True.
I don't want to be taking something that is going to hurt me or has no active ingredient.
Would you say, I mean, Amazon's such a popular place to get products now, and people just go right there and they hear something and they order something. Is that something that you would caution some athletes to do too?
I would say be really careful, because you know this, in the world of making money, there are going to be charlatans that are going to take a label from a really good company and put it on their product, and it looks like it is the product, but it isn't. So if you go onto Amazon and let's say you're going to buy a creatine supplement, you want to make sure that the distributor of that creatine supplement is actually the manufacturer. Yeah. You don't want it to go through a third-party vendor. And so when you look at, I mean, I order supplements from Amazon. I mean, if I'm going to order calcium, I'm going to order it. But I know enough, the average consumer, I think it's really hard to be a supplement consumer in 2025, because the bad actors are finding new and different ways of taking your money.
I mean, I think the advice that you just gave about making sure that the individual takes from the manufacturer, as opposed to, you know, whomever it is that might be selling it online, because that can present some major problems.
And Amazon had realized that they had a little bit of a problem, so they're now requiring a certificate of analysis for products that are coming through. But in the interim, there are products on the market that shouldn't be on the market anymore. And again, there's this pass-through. Can I get this through? Can I change the label a little bit and pass it through? And again, in my world, the things I lose sleep about are failed drug tests. My experience, and I'm only one person, but my experience is that the majority of positive drug tests that I've known about have come from dietary supplements. It's not someone sticking a needle in their behind.
Wow.
So that makes me really nervous, because again, there's supplements that flat out work. I mentioned creatine, you mentioned vitamin D, iron. These all work. I need to make sure that the consumer is protected against fraud, and that's a full-time job.
Do you see... One more question before we take a break. Do you see a rise in people taking supplements or a decline?
Rise. I think you knew the answer.
I kind of did.
It's an absolute rise, because now we not only have vitamins and minerals, and again, the supplements that the International Olympic Committee say actually work, we've got those, but now we have a whole new category of, should I take an NAD booster? Should I take a supplement IV versus by mouth? So we've got all these new industries that are out there.
Brett, this is fascinating conversation. We will be right back after this break. More with Roberta Anding. If you're just joining us, we're talking with Roberta Anding, co-founder of Performance 365 and longtime sports dietitian for the Houston Astros, the Houston Texans, Rice University, among so many others. Roberta is an educator, a speaker, and advocate for connecting what we eat to how we perform mentally and physically. And Roberta, we're going to kind of move into another topic that is very popular now, talk about gut health.
Yeah.
I have personally seen the effects of not having good gut health with friends and family. So, you know, you've talked about how gut health affects your immunity.
Mm-hmm.
How does that do that?
Well, when you think about your immune system, about 70% of your actual immune system is in the gut. Fancy term, it's called gut-associated lymphoid tissue. and that is oftentimes abbreviated as GALT, G-A-L-T. And so that's where your immune system lives. So what you are putting in your gut is going to directly impact immune function as well as overall health and well-being. So we've already established people don't eat enough fiber. Okay, that's problem number one. Problem number two is there's not, for the average person, enough diversity in their diet to promote adequate gut health.
That makes total and complete sense. What are some foods that help the gut get better?
Oh, yeah. So naturally fermented foods. Yogurt being up there as a naturally fermented food. Kefir is also a naturally fermented food. Things that maybe are not on the top 10 list for most people to eat is a fermented cabbage beverage, not beverage, food product called kimchi and sauerkraut, as well as refrigerated pickles. So if you get pickles that are refrigerated, they have not been pasteurized, there is still that healthy probiotic that is in pickles. So if you don't like kimchi and you don't like sauerkraut, look for refrigerated pickles.
My wife's going to be really excited to hear that because she loves eating refrigerated pickles. And so I can tell her that that's
she's a leader, right?
She didn't even know she was doing a great thing and she's already doing it. Have you found out, like, with some people, when I did the test and I had very low acidic in my stomach, where some people have really high.
Yeah.
What's kind of the difference?
So
that's a big question.
It is a big question, but most people think that having acid in your stomach is a bad thing. Actually isn't. Because that low pH, the pH of your stomach would take paint off of a car. And it's there to make sure that's your first line against food poisoning. So bacteria can't survive at low pH. So if I have a normal gut, pH of maybe around 2, that what ends up happening is I get some bacteriostatic, the ability to kill bacteria as my first line of defense. So I'm not a big fan of people just buffering their stomach or taking proton pump inhibitors to reduce the acid unless there's a medical reason for it, because you want that low pH. We talked about iron. Iron is also activated in a low pH environment. So from my point of view, God or Mother Nature got it right to begin with. And so we go in and try and modify it and say, I don't want that acid in my stomach. You actually do.
Is there something you can do to increase acid? Any foods or something?
That's actually a great question. I don't know of anything that can increase it. But there are naturally buffering agents out there. So calcium is a buffering agent. Okay. So for people who take calcium supplements, they are buffering. The whole trend now with alkaline water also buffers. It also buffers. And so foods, I don't know that I could give you some, but calcium and alkaline water are two buffering compounds that I see a lot of people using.
I heard some research on gut health and mental health.
Yeah. It's a big deal.
It's a topic that's starting to become more and more prevalent.
Yes. And again, our standard American diet, oftentimes referred to as SAD, our standard American diet lacks fiber.
You just said that. It kind of had to take me a second to process.
SAD.
That is, and it's true.
It is.
It's so
we
true.
We eat a lot of ultra-processed foods, no fiber, no naturally occurring antioxidants. So we're not giving our gut bacteria the proper fuel for it to do its job. So if you think back on just dietary strategies like the Mediterranean diet, where there's a lot of different variety, a lot of different produce on the plate, those are all things that are going to give you the right complement of bacteria. And there have been studies on the Mediterranean diet that the Mediterranean diet properly executed can help to reduce depressive symptoms.
Wow.
So we do know that nice gut-brain connection. So when I see someone who is struggling with their mental health, yes, they need to go see a physician. Yes, they need to go see mental health providers, 100%. But I also want to make sure that their overall diet is supportive of that natural gut microbiome.
When you're looking for food in a store, I heard this, I don't know who told me this, but they said anything around the perimeter is pretty good for you. A lot in the middle, because you mentioned highly processed foods. As soon as you get in that middle part, it can kind of get a little wonky, dicey.
A little wonky. But there are things in the interior of the store, like brown rice and beans, that I would say deserve a seat at your table, mm-hmm. because these are both high fiber foods. Great, beans actually are a great source of antioxidants. So we've got a lot of different things in there, but to me, the better way of looking at it is if you look at a list of ingredients and you think, I don't know what that word means. I don't know what a maltodextrin is. I don't know what this is. A glucose syrup, I don't have glucose syrup in my pantry.
Right.
So if you don't recognize the ingredients or you don't have it in your kitchen, chances are it's gonna fall into that processed food category.
That makes it easier to say. I mean, you look at some of the labels, uh-huh. and there's, you know, 20 or 30 ingredients listed on something that is actually a pretty simple product, or at least
right.
I thought it'd be pasta or something of that nature.
Exactly.
And there's just a lengthy list of it. So that makes a lot of sense. If you don't know what the word is.
Yeah. And some people don't know what the
sure.
vitamins, how to pronounce vitamins, and that's been on the national stage. They don't know how to pronounce vitamin names. But if it's a food ingredient, then it's like, if I don't have that at my house, if I don't have
right.
a modified cornstarch product in my house, then the question is, does that warrant a seat at the table? I think the other concern, though, is what do you do if you're really poor? What do you do if you're really poor and you don't have a grocery store close by? This is where I think visiting with a registered dietitian that can help you be a little bit better than you were before, maybe not to the pinnacle of a professional athlete, but a little bit better than you were before, I think that's an important consideration, because we don't want to food shame people. We don't want to say you should never eat this. That generally doesn't go well. But I think making sure that at least you have a vegetable and a fruit at most meals is just a simple way of help promoting optimum health.
That's what I was going to ask. I mean, I've heard the, you know, have a rainbow, have a very colorful plate. You know, I mean, there's a lot of times I go eat some meals, especially in the state of Texas, where there's where there's not a whole lot of color in it. It's very...
What's the color, though, right?
Yeah, I guess it's a lot of browns. A lot of browns. But so when you start thinking about gut health and, you know, we talked about supplements. Are there supplements that can help out with gut health?
Yeah, there are supplements. And again, I work with some real probiotic experts at Baylor College of Medicine. And I always ask them, do you take probiotics? And the answer I generally get is no, is that I'd rather get my probiotics from real food. However, if, say, for example, for a medical reason, you're on antibiotics for a long time, I do recommend people take probiotics. Take your antibiotics, and then about 4 hours later, take a really good mixed probiotic. And there's some great research from this guy by the name of Neil Walsh from the UK that talks about probiotics are probably one of the most beneficial supplements for athletes to take in the season with immunosuppression. So should you be taking a probiotic? And to me, the answer is, if it isn't going to hurt you, probably not a bad idea. But there may be some real efficacy behind taking a mixed strain probiotic.
So I mean, there's probiotics and prebiotics. What's the difference between those two?
Great question. So prebiotics are the food for the bacteria. So you'll see unusual things like honey and Jerusalem artichokes and seaweed as all being these prebiotics. It's like, well, this is kind of weird. What are they? They're actually food for the good guys. They're food for the good guys. And so if you're eating a sad diet and taking a probiotic, I'd say clean up your house first and get some fruits and vegetables in there before I would just supplement with a probiotic. It's not a magic bullet.
You mentioned honey, and that kind of triggered in my mind that to ask you this. I've heard, you know, for people that have allergies and so forth, picking local honey, not necessarily just a national brand of honey, but something that's local. What are your thoughts on that?
The reason I like honey a little bit better than table sugar, and I'm not anti-sugar because sometimes athletes need sugar, and I call it sugar with a purpose. Is there a purpose behind your chocolate milk? Why is it chocolate milk versus white milk as a recovery drink? Sugar with a purpose. But honey is local honey is probably a better option for you, again, depending on your environment and your allergy status. The other thing that I think deserves some conversation is most honey is lower in fructose than table sugar. So if I'm looking at lower fructose sugars, it's going to be honey and maple syrup. So if I have a choice of making a smoothie, I'm going to make it with one of those two sweeteners versus pouring in table sugar.
That's my preference for sure. I mean, I have honey almost every single day. Fascinating. We touched on a bunch of stuff. We're going to be back right after the break, and we're going to talk some trends and some big picture nutrition with Roberta right after this commercial break. We're in our final segment with Roberta Anding, renowned dietitian, educator, and co-founder of Performance 365. From pro locker rooms to college campuses, Roberta has been at the forefront of sports nutrition, helping athletes make smarter choices and build habits for long-term performance. We're going to shift in a little bit into some current trends and current thought processes that kind of overtake us. And we were talking in the break just about how everybody tries different things.
Of course.
And, you know, one of the things, the plant-based diet is one, with the carnivore diet, the, you know, Whole 30, you kind of go across. What's kind of your thoughts about all of these different diets? And I'd be the first to admit I've tried a lot of them.
Everybody tries. Whatever the diet du jour is, everyone's right. Thinking, okay, I haven't heard this before, so let me try it. So if we look at the extremes, when we look at a plant-based diet, anytime you eliminate a food group, you're going to eliminate a nutrient. So for example, if you're truly plant-based and you're vegan and you have no dairy, you're going to have to supplement with calcium. There's just not another really great source. Zinc and iron become a little bit suspect. That doesn't mean it can't work. So when I was at the Texans, we had an athlete, Arian Foster, who had just a breakout year, and he became vegan. And the beauty of that was I was able to bring things into the cafeteria that I wasn't able to bring before because he became a cultural leader.
Interesting.
He was a cultural leader. And the only thing he struggled with, it was a lot of food. 5,000 calories of plant-based food is a lot, and you can only eat so many nuts and seeds. And you have to supplement. You have to supplement. On the other side of the spectrum is individuals who are on carnivore diets. And when we look at those as a group, it's low carb.
Right.
It's the low carb people. And in the athletic world, if somebody is going to do low carb for, let's say, to cut some body fat, not going to say it doesn't work, they can't do it during the season.
Right.
Carbohydrate is the fuel of exercising muscle. And everybody's tried to say, well, maybe we can get fat adapted, and the science isn't there yet. It isn't completely there. So for me, if that's something you really want to try, off season is the best time to do it. You can't play football on just protein only. You can't.
Right.
Or you can, but you're just not going to be at peak performance.
Has there been a diet that somebody's come to you with that just kind of blew you away? I mean, you've seen a lot of it. Is there something that somebody's like, hey, I'm going to start doing this?
Well, it was a carnivore diet. I had a football player who came to me and said, this is the best thing ever. I need more protein. It's like, dude, you're already eating about twice the amount of protein that you need as a football player. And so I finally said to him, you can certainly do that, but I'm going to give you a seat next to the head coach on the bench because that's where you're going to live. That's where you're going to live. And so if that's really something that you want to do, you can go that direction. Most of the time, it's people coming to me and saying, I really want to be vegan, but I know you're going to say no. It's like, no, I'm not. I'm just going to help you to supplement appropriately. That now that plant-based diet with all those great antioxidants and the fiber and feeding your gut microbiome. So if I'm going to lean a little bit towards an alternative way of eating, if we want to call it that, it's going to be more plants on the plate versus more meat on the plate.
So we also talked in the break about the diversity of athletes. You know, you've got individuals from various countries.
Yes.
And you mentioned it right at the beginning of the show. How has the introduction, when somebody comes to a country, this even could apply to somebody that's traveling,
sure,
you know, on a vacation, that you're going to a different culture, mm-hmm, and you're having to eat that culture's food. How does that kind of thing? I mean, I think of all the Latin players that come from Latin America, come and play Major League Baseball. Food's very different. Or somebody that comes from Norway or comes from England.
Completely different. So with the Latin players, oftentimes they were very apologetic about beans and rice because that was what you ate when you were poor. And so when I was at the Astros, we had beans and rice at every meal because I said, this is performance nutrition. It's flat out performance nutrition. And so there was a buy-in from the whole team that there was going to be beans and rice at every meal. When it was my rice athletes, and I have athletes that come from all over the world, and that's why, my opinion, rice is just such an amazing place. They were stunned at the amount of added sugar. Everything had to be sweet.
Yeah.
Everything had to be sweet. If you were going to eat yogurt, it had to have tablespoons of sugar. And it's like, can't I just get plain yogurt with no sweetener? It's like, yeah, you can. Yes, you can. And that the adaptation was, I don't want to eat like an American. And rice has amazing food, unbelievably great food. But they would struggle with all the different sugary choices that American students were just so used to. So that to me is one of the best parts of my job, is how do I help someone adapt to the culture? And that also includes when they have to travel, if they're traveling internationally.
So, you know, you've worked with athletes at the highest level, obviously, but you also teach and work with young people.
Yeah.
What are some of the new nutrition trends that you're most excited about and kind of helping those young people feel and perform?
So I always say my career is peewees to pros because I take care of little kids on a regular basis. Their nutrition is dictated by their parents, right? So if their parents are on Whole30 or a low carbohydrate diet, now all of a sudden sugar becomes the enemy. And so for children, let's say playing soccer, and let's say that 8-year-old is the starting center mid and you know he or she is running up and down the field, they need a carbohydrate source. So yes, it could be oranges, yes, it could be bananas, but this is where people just get so overly concerned, my opinion, with using a fast-acting carbohydrate to fuel the body. So it's like, oh no, sports drinks? No, you gotta use coconut water. Okay, coconut water, it's got some electrolytes in it, but it doesn't have any carbohydrate, most of them, don't have any carbohydrate to fuel the exercising muscle. So the trends I'm seeing are anti-carbohydrate coming from, and again, as a parent, if I'm watching my son run track, I don't need a sports drink, I don't need a pretzel, I need nothing because I'm doing nothing. So the needs of your athletic children are different than the needs of mom and dad.
Interesting. One of the other, I've seen it a lot in social media, is people talking about eggs.
Yeah.
I mean, I've probably seen more information or more talk about eggs than ever before. I love eggs. I eat eggs almost every single day. So I enjoy it, but why has that kind of been this new kind of trend?
Well, we sort of ruined eggs, and I'll raise my hand as a dietitian. We sort of ruined eggs by telling people don't ever eat the yolk.
Okay.
And in reality, the yolk is going to contain B vitamins, and particularly a vitamin called choline that most people have never heard of before, but is absolutely needed for brain health.
Okay.
Absolutely needed for brain health. There are neurotransmitters in your brain, phosphatidylcholine. Choline is a big player. So eating the whole egg does make a difference. It's also an unbelievably high quality source of protein. And even though we've had blips on the radar, most of the time eggs are affordable. So for families that don't have a whole lot of financial resources, eggs become a really great source of overall nutrition.
I absolutely love eggs, so it's a thing. When we're talking about, when I'm over in Europe a lot, there's, you know, bread.
Yeah.
I love bread, but it tastes so different
here
than it does when I'm in, you know, Croatia or, you know, another part of the world. Why is that?
Because oftentimes when you're in countries like that value the quality of food. And I'm not saying we don't here in the United States, but we value convenience and taste here in the United States.
Makes a lot of sense.
Versus the food itself. So if I go to a bakery in Croatia and I buy bread, it's limited ingredients. I'm not going to find all the stabilizers and the rest of it because it's designed to be eaten that day.
Right.
And if you wait a day or two, it's stale. It's stale, but the flavor and the difference is remarkable to me. It's remarkable to me. And that's where a lot of my international students will say, are there places in Houston that we can get bread like that? And it's like you have to go to an individual bakery.
Yep.
And it has to be, you have to be willing to eat it the same day or make croutons out of it or something else if it becomes stale. But I think the value in many European countries is more on quality. And here we want something that's fast, quick, and easy.
Amazing. I could talk about this stuff forever. Roberta, this has been an inspiring and really rich conversation. I want to touch base a little bit more in the last couple of minutes on Performance 365.
Yeah.
How can that, or how does your consulting group help others?
Well, we decided, the three of us, and it was Jen Ketterly, who was at UGA, Leslie, who was with the Kansas City Chiefs. We were sitting around one day and said, people should have access to professionals that have enough experience that we can address most problems and can do it in an effective and efficient way, where I might be able to craft a menu for a team in 2 hours. If somebody is brand new to the field, it may take them significantly longer. So we did all the initial work for the UFL, the USFL. We consult with high schools, other companies. We've done company work, consulting for companies that are trying to change a food culture. And that's sort of what our area of expertise is. So Leslie is much more creative. I tend to have that clinical brain. Leslie is so creative. I tend to be that clinical person, and Jen is a superb businesswoman. So the three of us, different personalities, different skill sets, but that's how Performance 365 came to be.
That's awesome. Thank you again, Roberta, for joining us today and sharing your impactful insights on how nutrition drives performance, energy, and longevity, not just for pro athletes, but really for all of us. Her experience and passion are a powerful reminder that food choices we make daily can be a game changer in our own lives too. If today's episode got you thinking differently, make sure you tune in more and we can sure catch all these episodes of The Game Changer Unlocked on Now Media TV. For myself, Brian Fetzer, until next time, stay focused, stay ready, and keep changing the game.